it came down to one property in particular that just wasn't getting the attention that she thought it deserved. Like she thought something was up. Why isn't this property selling? Because everything else about market timing and everything seemed fine. The comp data suggested the price was right. Why isn't she not getting the offers? Why isn't she getting, you know, that engagement, that commitment? And so she thought, well, you know, let's float the idea with the sellers and, you know, I'll give it a shot. You know, we've tested the market. We haven't gotten the response. Let's see how it goes. And we crushed it. And then we did it again and again and again.
Welcome to Rethink Real Estate. My name is Ben Brady, and this is a real estate podcast aimed to deliver sales strategies, marketing tips, and business insights from industry experts and myself to build a listing-focused business for the future. Let's get into it. Well, folks, we're here with one of the originals, Mr. Shannon Mesritz. Shannon, welcome to Rethink Real Estate, or back to Rethink Real Estate, I should say.
Thanks, mate. Yeah, one of the OGs.
Do you know, it's funny. Actually, I was looking at it the other day on the historical trend for the 100 episodes that we did on season one. You were the very first episode for Rethink Real Estate. Did you know that?
I did not know that, no. You and Jason.
No. You're the very first. I remember because you'd only just moved to Oregon at the time to launch the auction platform up there. And interestingly enough is that you're one of the most listened to because, as you can appreciate, like one our last 100th episode, people listen to all the time, which actually annoys me a little bit. Like we've got something like 12,000 plays of why buying at auction is better or something along those lines. And then there's yours. So people typically listen to the last episode that was done on the season and it sat there for 2 years and then everyone listened to the first episode. So it's actually you and everyone getting the backstory of you. So I'm not going to ask you too many questions because I'm going to assume that a lot of people have actually heard about you, but we have a new crowd, mate.
I'll take that. Yeah. Feeling the love. I remember where I was when we recorded that episode.
Where were you?
Near one of the very first listings that we had in Oregon. I was sitting in the car. We were doing it in the car. I was worried about the audio and what was going on around it. But yeah, it feels like forever ago, but also like yesterday. Strange, huh?
Yeah, it is strange. It's funny. Shannon back in the day had a Harcourt's Auctions mobile and it was a Ford Explorer. And this thing looked real cool. Like it was actually a really cool, we had like these stripes on it and all of that type of stuff. It was a great car.
Yeah, they're also affectionately known as the Safari Wagon because of the stripes, I guess. Anyway, a lot of miles on that car. It was a great car.
That's right. That's right indeed. But mate, I guess that the one thing that I just wanted to sort of, you know, touch on today is sort of segueing away from the Oregon marketplace, of which you established with the auction process there early on. But now you're in the Bay Area. So you're joining us from the Marina District in San Francisco. Mate, have you had to swim out of your house yet?
No, like thankfully we weren't too bad here with the floods and all the crazy storms, but a lot of friends got affected, a lot of clients as well too, but we're all good. You know, California's not built for so much rain, I suppose, but we definitely needed it. So, yeah, three years strong here now, just over 3 years strong. So, yeah,
great. Good. Well, so being the pioneer in the Bay Area for the auction process is obviously you've been there from the inception of it. You know, all different types of price categories going from San Francisco down to the peninsula, down to San Jose, you know, over to East Bay, up to Marin, you know, even out to Napa Valley and Sonoma County and all of that type of stuff as well. You've seen a lot of the Bay Area, mate. So again, you're going to be the best to speak to it, speak to the auction process on it, and just speak to the generality of that marketplace at the moment as it goes through a little bit of a cultural shift. The thing that I wanted to get is your opinion on, mate, because you get to see real estate's typically an agent, if you ask them the question around how is San Francisco market doing or the Bay Area market, they can only give you a snapshot of, say, San Francisco, the peninsula, San Jose. Some might have opinions of others, just like any real estate professional, they'll probably give you an opinion. But whether or not it is the accurate information, you get to actually see all of those markets. I'm curious to get your perspective of things. You know, we've just at the beginning of 2023, COVID is a thing of the past now as much as like from a media standpoint. But with the job marketplace going so virtual in the tech space and San Francisco being, or the Bay Area being so fueled by tech over the last decade, have you seen an exodus? Like what have you seen the market do? Because the reason I ask is for the last decade, it's been the hottest marketplace on planet Earth pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know what? It gets really like hyper-local, hyper-specific. depending on what area of the Bay we're talking about and what types of properties we're talking about. But, you know, SF in general, I feel like it's gotten a lot quieter. You know, I made a bunch of friends here in the first couple of years, and a ton of them have moved out. You know, they're all over the States. They've gone interstate. A lot of them are gone remote work. Like one of my buddies that was, you know, here for the long term has just moved to Hawaii. You know, he can work remote and have a beach life there. So it's like, it's not just like my friends that we're hearing, a lot of the clients and the people that we're helping, the sellers that we're helping with our auction campaigns as well too. Like a lot of them moving out of state, not just moving to different parts of the Bay Area. So, I mean, the general trend, obviously we focus on this listing and sales side, is that, you know, the clients that we deal with most of the time are moving away from, all right, we've only got those stories, but it really depends. SF, I feel, is really suffered post-COVID and the remote work from home arrangements. Obviously, the mass layoffs in tech are, you know, hugely affecting Silicon Valley as well too. The appeal of, you know, workers there and surrounding areas there too as well. Single-family homes, you know, are still getting a lot of the interest. We're still seeing tons of buyers out there, but the commitment factor is just like on the floor.
Right, and that's where
really attached to commit.
And that's where you're coming in with the auction process to really help the real estate community there at the moment with reinvigorating their properties from an interest perspective. Because two-part question for you, Shannon, is that I almost called you lad. So folks, I'm going to do a quick little, I'm going to rabbit hole here for a second. Shannon's affectionate nickname is Lad, L-A-D. Reason why is that back in the day, back in Australia, in Brisbane, there was a gentleman by the name of John Kalaja, and he'd always call him Shannon Lad. So we just started calling him Lad. So if you hear me call him Lad, it's not an offensive term. It's simply a sign of endearment. Your perspective on, there's been about 150,000 tech jobs that have been laid off really in the Bay Area specific. Now, that means that doesn't mean necessarily that they're all there. It means that some of them may be remote or anything along those lines. That was just at the third quarter of last year or the last 6 months of last year. Yeah. And also there's obviously been more. I think there was 40,000 people that were let go of Amazon. Now, everybody says that it's interesting because the tech industry has definitely got a surplus of workers. For every one tech job, there's about 7 people that could actually fill that position at this point. Whereas if you go to the restaurant industry, there's 0.3 people to every one job. So whilst they say that there's a massive unemployment, it actually really is only in tech because everyone's still crying out for jobs elsewhere. What have you seen the repercussions on the San Francisco marketplace from those layoffs? But then also the repercussions on, I guess, people that have moved away, what has it done to that marketplace or to the individual marketplaces at the moment? Because you're there, you're in the thick of it. What are your thoughts?
It's kind of a mixed bag depending on demographics, honestly. I think a lot of the, you know, the younger people that once upon a time or in, you know, pre-COVID would have been trying to get into apartment life here, buying their first apartments or their stepping stone properties, investing into something that they're going to, you know, eventually sell at some point when they look to settle down and move out of the city. A lot of that's just not happening anymore. We have a huge surplus of small apartments, small condos, shall I say, you know, single bedders, studios, all that stuff is just sitting really, really tight. And not a lot of it's moving, high inventory in that regard. Some of the more, family style condos are still seeing good throughput. They're just taking a lot longer. For example, like I've got friends that have properties outside of the city. They're renting those out and moving into the city to rent because the rents are cheaper here in the city. They can get back a bit of that, younger lifestyle for a little bit and make way more money on their larger single family homes outside of the city right now because the rents have gone up because sale volume's gone down. You know, it works inverse in that regard. So it's really a mixed bag. You're seeing all sorts of stuff, but the general consensus stuff is just taking so much longer. And I think a lot of that's got to do really with the average price point here being so much higher, those interest rates affecting that so much more dramatically on the month-to-month payments. People are just lowering their overheads, especially if they're in tech, and looking to move further out if they can, if they're remote. You know, worrying about job security and stuff like that too. So, yeah, it depends who you talk to. Some realtors will say everything's perfect and peachy and rosy. But I think the ones that are really on the front lines here doing more of the volume, you know, if they're not talking to a client and putting forth a positive marketing spin, the realities are it's definitely slow in all categories.
So as we change gears and we move more towards the agency side of the business versus the actual general market position at this point, is that, Shannon, I'm sure that there's got to be some sticker shock out there at the moment from realtors. And I'll say it because, you know, you've got to obviously be loyal to the people that you're up there on the front lines with. But let's be honest, is the last 10 years of the Bay Area, maybe even longer, maybe the last 15 years is the surge of technology stuff has come through Silicon Valley with venture capital, with startups, with all of the technology business that there is now. Obviously, that's dissipated to other parts of the company, but I'd like to think that, you know, San Francisco or the Bay Area, I should say, certainly the peninsula is the foreground for technology with inside not only North America, but quite possibly the world. And that is fueled, the technology industry has fueled this auction-like culture before we even were doing non-distressed auctions up there. Now things have changed. It's a traditional real estate marketplace, and we're seeing some real trip-ups from the agents that have never dealt in a marketplace that has been normalized. And they're normalized as multiple offer situations, all cash offers, like things that real estate personnel or real estate agents in other parts of the country would salivate over. That's been their normal marketplace for the last 10, 15, 20 years. It's a different world there at the moment. What are you seeing as an industry perspective, mate, because you get to see all brands, all agents, all markets? What are you seeing there from a denial perspective, or what are you seeing?
Yeah, and I mean, you know, first and foremost, like there's a lot of great agents here. We get to work with a lot of great agents. I think the biggest thing, the hang up that we have is that a lot of agents, like you said, that have been in the industry less than, you know, 15, 12 years or so, or even 10 years, post the financial crisis, haven't had to deal with a slowing or corrected market. You know, they're just so used to this offers over asking situation. As you said, it's almost like a mock auction. You know, it's like a non-transparent auction. It's like if you get a listing, you're getting paid. You're going to sell it. There's going to be multiple offers over asking. You know, you're going to submit all the offers to your seller and have them pick one, you know, or, you know, sometimes it'll multi-counter and get the cream on top or whatever. But that's the easiest thing you can ever do in real estate. All the work is the preparation and putting it on an MLS, and then it's a cakewalk from there after for the most part. If you're getting a listing, you're selling it. If you've got a buyer that wants to buy, you're making money. Now all the work is so much harder. You've got to use a process of price discovery and seller education to actually get an understanding of, well, what is market value right now? Because screw all the comps, all the comps of sales properties are 30 days ago. You know, the market's shifted so rapidly. Like in December in SF, prices went down another 5% just in December. So it's like, well, if we're looking at data, you know, 30 days ago, we're talking about 10% difference in 6 weeks. It's really hard to stay in front of the trend and you know what that data suggests. So, you know, auction is becoming a really obvious option for sellers, more so just to sidestep the price hurdle, because a lot of them don't want to get the price wrong. They want to be able to move. They want to know that they've gotten the highest price in the marketplace, but they don't want to sit on the market for an extended period of time, because the longer they're on, the more properties come onto the inventory and everyone starts, you know, people are getting a little bit more motivated than the other. Someone does a price reduction, everyone follows suit. And then we're chasing the market down in certain pockets where it's just a, you know, lack of better terminology, starting to become a bloodbath in some of these areas where there's just so much inventory and nothing's moving.
Do you remember, mate, when we first went there? I remember the conversations. I still remember the look on an agent's face that will remain nameless when I sat in front of them. They're like, well, we already get the highest prices for properties in multiple offer situations. I'm like, well, how do you know you didn't undersell it? Well, what do you mean? Well, what do you mean? We had multiple offers. I'm like, well, multiple offers isn't the catalyst to whether or not you got the most amount of money. Was that buyer in competition? Yes, they were in competition. Great. Did the buyer that was the underbidder or the under offer, did they get a chance to know what that other offer is and have a chance to pay more? No. Yeah. Well, I'm pretty sure they would have if they were given the chance to. And like, they just looked at me like, you're wrong. No, you're wrong. We get the highest prices because we get multiple offers. Yeah. And it's like, it was... And again, like, I'm never going to judge an agent. They don't know what they don't know. Like, at the end of the day, they haven't been brought through the auction process. They haven't seen the success of it. They didn't know that it was available, all those different things. So their belief is as deep-seated as ours is in the auction process. Yeah. So you've got to give props to them in that perspective. But you know, also the nature of most people that are successful realtors, they're not exactly overly open to something new.
Yeah.
But that
says it best. Like, you know, I remember I chased her for nearly 2 years before we got an opportunity to work with
Sorry,
her.
Sorry, who was that, mate?
Diana Cole.
Oh, Diana Cole. All right.
Yeah. So, you know, I chased her for nearly 2 years before she gave me the opportunity, like, for example, you know, and you know, the mentality was, and we laugh about it now to these days, she'll say something like, you know, what are you going to teach me, foreign kid? Like, I've been in real estate 25 years. Like, I know my recipe. Why am I going to change the recipe? Like, what I do works. And, you know, now her mentality is that, like, I don't want to do it any other way. Like, I'll
keep. Can I ask, mate? Diana's probably a great, because she's one of our auction pioneers up there, and she does a wonderful job for all of us representing the process. And she's certainly probably one of your best auction agents in that marketplace now. Yeah. Is that she's been doing it, like you said, 25 years and a pretty predominant force there. What was the moment she gave you a chance? Was it because what was the moment that she's like, fine, I'll give this a try? Yeah. What was that?
I think it was more persistence than anything, and, you know, and just getting in front of her. But it came down to one property in particular that just wasn't getting the attention that she thought it deserved. Like, she thought something was up. You know, why isn't this property selling? Because everything else about market timing and everything seemed fine. The comp data suggested the price was right. Why isn't she not getting the offers? Why isn't she getting, you know, that engagement, that commitment? And so she thought, well, you know, let's float the idea with the sellers, and, you know, I'll give it a shot. You know, we've tested the market, we haven't gotten the response. Let's see how it goes. And we crushed it, and then we did it again and again and again. But it literally took, you know, getting in front of her to sort of explain how it works and why it works. And I think, you know, kudos to her for being open about it. I think she just thought, well, you know, if this is a primary method and you know, such a huge method of sale in other places, like, maybe we're missing out. I'm okay to try it. But it took that persistence, you know. I mean, I could talk about agent hesitance all day, you know.
Can we dive into that a little bit? Because you've actually been somebody that's been a pretty loud voice within the Harcourts Auctions team around the fact that we probably don't do enough training or speak enough about how agents can bring it to their sellers. Now, one of the biggest challenges that we see when agents don't mention auction in the first degree of listing that property, they feel very uncomfortable going back to that seller and asking them, hey, would you consider doing auction? Because they feel like the sellers are going to judge them or going to say something or going to be like, well, why didn't you present me this process in the first degree? Why is it, Shannon, that we will sit in front of a seller and 9 times out of 10, once we explain the logic of auction, they'll say yes. But when we do it to an agent, they'll try and protect the listing more. Like, do you think it's because of they don't know how to provoke that conversation?
I think it's a couple of things. Like, you know, going back to, you know, Diana's like thing about, like, why would I change the recipe if it works? You know, they're not used to doing anything different, Ben. You know, that's the thing. And that's not to say, like you said, it's not an agent problem. It's just like anything, you learn to do something a certain way, and that's just the way you do it for the rest of your life. You know, there are a lot of agents out there that claim to be innovative and, you know, ahead of the curve and always learning and always looking at different, you know, things, especially here in the Bay where it's so tech, you know, savvy, and we're ahead of everywhere else in the world with the next greatest tech platform, yet they won't employ something like that's been around forever, auction. You know, they'll almost deny the opportunity of learning about it because they're so set in their ways. I think it comes down to a multitude of factors. Yes, yeah. They've got their own recipe that it's worked previously. They'll just keep doing it. Path of least resistance, right? Not a lot of people, you know, want to learn and change and grow and do different things. That's human nature for a lot of people. But I think there's a pride factor in there as well. Like, I don't need help. You know, I know what I'm doing. I don't need anyone else to show me, you know, that, you know, I'm not doing enough, or I'm not getting it done. You know, I think there's an element there that really saddens me that, you know, a lot of the opportunity that we have as a business here as well too, the decision is made before the sellers by the agent. The sellers don't even know it's there. So when we do get to a point of, you know, those agents saying, yeah, let's give it a shot because we've been on the market for 30, 60, 90 days and hasn't sold, we haven't got offers, we're not getting people through the front door, we need to shift gears. And if the sellers don't want to do a drastic price reduction or reduce their expectations, let's try a different process to provoke a different result.
Yeah.
Like you said, took the words right out of my mouth. I've had multiple sellers here in the last 4 or 5 months even say, why didn't we just do this from the start?
Yeah.
Because they didn't know it was an option.
Yeah.
you know, and the agent's kind of like, oh.
It's kind of on, it's actually, you know, if you looked at it and you turned the tables around and you reflected on the mirror, it's actually kind of our fault that we're not getting the word out there enough so that people know the option. So, yeah. You know, as you still strive in your local marketplace to be somebody that is a resource for the agent community, yeah. The reality is that you can't blame agents not knowing what they didn't know. But that said is that it's funny that typically we're brought into a situation where it might already be too late. There might have already been money lost because of the traditional method of reducing a price point or staying on the market too long. It's really comes down to
100% of the time right now.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So mate, if we were going to role play this, I don't mind doing a bit of role play with you because you are doing this so often. If I'm an agent and you're going to coach me through how to bring this up with my sellers, I've got a listing. It's been on the marketplace 30, 45 days. You know, it's getting to the end of its tether where the sellers are starting to, you know, not be curious about the market. They're starting to blame me for the marketplace, and I need to come up with something, whether it's a price reduction or whether it's actually something from a different approach. And you've called me, and I've gone, "Hey, Shannon, look, I don't know about this property. You know, these sellers are pretty difficult. Well, how would I bring it up with them? What would you be telling me?"
Yeah. I mean, the easiest way to do it is talk about it from the start, because you're giving yourself a layup at the listing presentation for if it doesn't go right in a traditional sense, right? That's the easiest, way easiest path. But if you're getting to a point you haven't talked to the seller about it previously, you know, when you're getting to that point, I think the best way to do it, in my opinion and my experience here, is approaching like the average days on market. You know, go back and do some of the comps, look at the highest price properties per square foot that sold in that area and see what the average days on market for those top five sales were, at least in relative history, because it's got to make sense, right, and be relevant. But I think it gives you a point of conversation to suggest, well, the properties that sold for the best prices and the best price per square foot in this area only took X, Y, or Z days. We're now past that period. I'm worried if we continue on the path that we're going here, things are only going to get worse. We're going to lose more leverage, lose even more momentum. We really need to switch gears. So we make it about market timing more than anything. And so the point to bring up the conversation around, you know, what do we need to do? That's either a price reduction and generally significant one. You know, I like to do this like comparative, you know, market study or active market study. See what properties are on the market, how many days on market they've got. You can see like the view and save rate on Zillow. Stack them up against each other. You know, you can do this exercise that shows whether you're gaining or losing traction and how you actually stack up against some of these listings you're competing with. And you can use that as a data point for some of those.
So be more specific about that, mate, because like what, how do you do that study? Because you're 100% right. A property is never on the marketplace in isolation. It's always on the marketplace in competition with anything else that's around it. It's a supply and demand issue. Like and that marketplace can change within a matter of seconds when another listing comes on the market that is your competition. So how do you look at it?
Yeah, I mean, and all the tools are available there. It's all public information on like Zillow, right? You can look at the view rate and the save rate over the last 30 days. All that stuff's easy to get and put into a spreadsheet.
So you would go to each individual listing. So you would go into each individual listing and have a look at the save rates. You would have a look at the hit rates and look at what's getting more eyeballs, more saves on Zillow. And then you just put it into just a little bit of a spreadsheet. This is what you do in your presentation. Go, hey, guys, look, you're clearly losing traction in comparison to other things.
Yeah, I'll use this exercise as like supportive information to the argument, especially if you've got a really savvy seller that's like, I need the data and, you know, I need the proof. You know, these are tools that you can use to help justify, hey, what is happening right now and how things are going.
Yeah.
Not working. This is not a good trend that we're heading down. You know, simple stuff like that. You know, that's just a tool, but I think that just helps support the argument of, hey, what we're doing is not working here. And, time and no news is not good news. We're losing traction, losing momentum. It's not trending in the right direction in order to get you guys the most money in the shortest amount of time.
Yeah.
Especially with the way that things are trending in the economy, if you guys are still like, let's reassess your why and your goals and where you want to be. How do we keep you on that path here? Because staying on the market's not getting you towards your goals. We need to get you sold. So how are we going to do that? Price reduction right now is all we can change, really. If you've got great staging and photos, the property presents well, it's in a desirable area, well, it's 100% price. How do we attack the price gap of seller expectations versus what the market is telling us? Drastic price reduction, and what happens if you don't get the engagement? Do another one. We're just flipping the script, setting the baseline, and allowing
it becomes a slippery slope. Then at that point,
Yeah. So, you know, in getting back to the question at core is how do you have that conversation about switching gears? You know, look at the average days on market for the properties that have sold for the highest price. Every seller wants the highest price. It's a common trend, right? No one wants to undersell their property. So if we look at how and why those properties sold for the highest amounts of money, how do we replicate that? Is it price? Is it strategy? If we tick all the boxes with everything else, it's always price.
Yeah.
Let's look at a strategy that's going to shift that. That's got to be a price reduction, or of course, change the strategy. And, you know, hey, as your agent, we know we've identified, you know, some other options. There's some new options around in the Bay Area now. Obviously, we're such a tech savvy place in the world. We're always at the forefront of looking for other options for our sellers here. Yeah. I've identified Harcourt's auctions, yada, yada, yada.
Well, I think that, you know, one of the ways that I would certainly bring up auction with a seller is if I hadn't brought it up at the start, I would go and just simply use a success story. So for example, so guys, we're at a position at the moment that we're about 21 days on the marketplace, and it would be remiss of me, Mr. and Mrs. Seller, if I didn't talk to you about what's to come if we don't get any further interest. And what I mean by that is that, you know, realistically, in the traditional means of sale, is that we've got to reduce the price. And again, I don't want to suggest that, because at the end of the day, it becomes a slippery slope. And I'll be honest, is that the first price reduction that most people do isn't enough, because we are all still very hopeful that there's someone out there. And if it isn't enough, then I just have to come back to you within 2 weeks, 3 weeks time and ask for another one at that point. And it, again, becomes a slippery slope and damages your reputation. We've seen something locally that is a different strategy that worked. It was this property at 38 Smith Street. It was on the marketplace for 30 days. It didn't sell traditionally. Then they took it through this auction process. Now, I know auction is a prickly word, and I understand if you've got a bad reaction about that, but just hear me out. It ended up selling for more than what it was traditionally listed for, because it provoked a different portion of the market to look, and it actually made people do something. Because at the moment, I think you can agree with me, we're getting people through, but no one's taking action. That's kind of how I would actually go about it. You know, use, like, I'm sorry I didn't bring up with you before, but here's an example that has provoked me bringing this up with you that was a really successful way of doing so. You know, I think that there's definitely, Shannon, you've got a very more methodical and logical approach. I'm a bull in a china shop, as you know, is that I'm going in there and going, look at this result. I'm sorry that I didn't offer it to you in the beginning. Actually fall on your sword, you know, and say, sorry, I didn't offer it to you in the beginning. I just really ultimately wasn't aware of it until this result came through. And this is a tremendous result. And I'd hate to think that we would have to worry about others doing this before you do it. Because in a marketplace like we're in at the moment, Shannon, you'd agree with me, and maybe you might tell me it's different in the Bay Area, but the reality is at the moment in a market, it means that a seller that sells now sets the precedent for the others. So what I mean by that is that, let's say that I want $1 million for my home, and it's probably worth $1 million. However, the other properties that are on the markets, all someone has to do is accept $950,000, because their circumstances dictate that they have to. And all of a sudden, the new comparable is $950,000.
Yeah.
And because I didn't take that action first. So the first people out of this type of marketplace are the people that leave with the most amount of money.
Yeah. Yeah. And I train on this stuff all the time. It's just like, do you want to be the first sale or the last sale? Because if the market's not gone in the hot trend or increasing, you know, positive trend, you want to be the first. You know, it's like, because you don't know the motivations of any other sellers, you don't know their circumstances. Are they going to get the opportunity to move on because a lot more sellers are leaving the Bay Area? What do they care about the comparable prices? They're taking the money and running moving on to maybe other areas that are much more affordable. So we're seeing a lot more of those motivations. You know, it's quite interesting. We're seeing a lot more, like, you know, seller incentives and things like that too. Like, that's just, that shows the motivation for some sellers out there that, you know, can't even get those opportunities to sell. Some of us are so desperate. You know, they're doing price reductions after price reductions, or offering like 3% on the buyer's side now to try and incentivize people, which I think is bizarre.
I don't think that's ever been the case in the Bay Area, really, is buyer side incentive. So it obviously speaks to the market, which leads to another question. Yeah. Leads to another question, mate, that I'm very curious about. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but wanted to ask a quick favor. If you're seeing any value in what we're providing, we'd love it if you could like, follow, or subscribe, whether you're listening on a podcast or watching us on YouTube. One step further is that if you can think of anybody in your community that this episode could help, we'd love it if you could share it to them so we could cast our message further and broaden our audience. Thanks again. the nature of the Bay Area market, for those that aren't fully familiar with it, is that they run the closest to our non-distressed auction process than any other place in the country. So one of the things that we do is all the disclosures, all the reports and everything like that up front. We obviously set a date on when something is going to be sold. They do offer date side of things. But also we do a bidding to start from price that's drastically lower, and a lot more lower than what they would typically do. But they are used to doing below market value pricing. So essentially the seller wants $1 million, they'll put it on at 950, and knowing that basically the demand will drive it up over that because of cash buyers, there's always multiple offers, everything like that. I'm wondering if people are being caught, for lack of better terminology, with their pants down doing that strategy now because they've known nothing else, Shannon.
Yeah, 100%. And that's happening. You know, generally a lot of agents will do like 5 to 10% below what like comp value suggests. And, you know, the way that we know that that's not playing out in the right way at the moment, when, you know, some markets are swinging 5 to 10% month on month, is you're seeing price increases. So seeing price increases, like goes to the market, it's been on the market for a week, and then you see a price increase. You know they've tested a below market pricing strategy, and it hasn't,
really?
It hasn't played off. Yeah, seeing way more of it.
And oh, wow.
3% buyer side incentives. Like all of these things are check markers to show that who's got the leverage here? It's the buyers. And you've got plenty of agents educating around, you know, saying, oh, the, you know, inventory levels are still suggesting it's a seller's market. And sure, by data point it is, but by buyer commitment levels and volume of transactions, it's a buyer's market, 100%. Like buyers have all the leverage right now. So seeing these price increases and seeing buyer's side incentives at 3% just gives even more leverage to the buyer's side again. I find it bizarre, but you're seeing quite a lot more of it here. And here,
wow, that's
really weird.
That's amazing that, yeah. Like at the end of the day, the non-distressed auction process that we offer, we put a bidding to start from price on the property that is so vastly lower that it becomes a joke. Like it's clearly obvious that that's not the price the property is. Yeah. Whereas if you're toying with a traditional list price, which technically the seller is obligated to accept, if ultimately there is an offer at that price and there's not a better one, okay, is that there is some technicality legally that they could be bound to actually accepting that offer in a traditional sense if it isn't advertised as a non-distressed auction and all of the stuff that we've obviously perfected over the years in order to make sure that people are selling their property safely. The reality is that if they're toying with that in that marketplace of still put the perception, or maybe they're just oblivious to the fact of what an actual non-seller's market looks like because they haven't seen it for so long, yeah, is that that's gambling with people's financial futures. Like I've often spoken about this, Shannon, about the moral hazard that there is in real estate. Like if you don't go take your sellers through an appropriate education process for them to really see the marketplace with their own two eyes, and then they say no to $1 million offer in the first week, and then they end up having to accept $950,000 later, I truly believe that that was the agent's fault for not letting the marketplace speak to its own degree. And they'll say and defend themselves that it's the seller's choice and all of that type of stuff. But really, it's our job to be the conduit to the market so that it speaks clearly for them to make a good decision. And I believe the $50,000 that they actually lost is actually the fault of the agent. And imagine if the industry changed and said that, well, that agent was liable for the $50,000, there would be a lot less realtors in the marketplace. But but that's kind of what's kind of happening in the Bay Area with that mentality of thinking that not adapting to market change, if that is the case. I can't believe you're seeing price increases.
Yeah. And it's purely, I think, it just comes down to education of sellers. You know, the seller's expectations are X, Y, and Z. Maybe the agent's gone in there and saying, oh, yeah, we'll get that. If we started here, we're going to get that. You know, I think if you're promising anything to sellers at the moment, you're doomed from the start. Other than, of course, a process that's going to find market value, you know. My big thing and you know, hand on heart, the thing that I love most about this industry is actually helping people. And at the end of the day, and I know a lot of agents say that, but when you think about it, there's really only two outcomes on any sale of the property, right? Sellers want to sell a property for a specific reason. They either A, meet the market, however good, bad, or indifferent, that washes out, or they change their plans. Right, they don't accept market, they don't meet market, they don't sell, they change their plans, however that looks. So they're really the only two outcomes. It's our job to do everything that we can to make sure that they've had all the best information to make that call, whether they accept market, and obviously bring the best result. That's the answer to that. But we've got to be doing everything we can to make that decision a lot more easy. Would they accept market because they know hand on heart that this is the best they're going to get in this snapshot of time, and they can move on with their plans, or they change them? You know, if we're promising things that may or may not happen from the start, it's just so hard to get sellers trust or keep sellers in trusting. And this is why we're working with agents now that are picking up listings that have gone expired from another agent that's maybe promised the world that wasn't able to deliver.
Yeah.
And the next agent comes in and tells them the real truths and the realities of, hey, if we want to stick to your goals and your plans, here's the process.
Yeah, but also, but like you just said, mate, it's a process. Like you just said, is that they're going into the listing with a process and saying to them in the sense that, guys, I would be an idiot to try and guess what your property is worth at the moment. That's why we're going to use an auction method where we put a lower bidding to start from price on and captivate the entire market, so then you guys can make an informed and educated decision on what it is. And that's the real benefit, certainly in a market that hasn't experienced this type of tumultuous side of things. Because let's face it, every time that there's some media about a tech company, I would assume that the Bay Area sort of quivers a little bit based on price.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, honestly, having those conversations from the start, and a lot of the presentations, a lot of the business that we've done here in the Bay, especially in the last quarter of last year, almost, you know, I would say like 80% of the listings that we help, you know, sell and close on were previously listed without a result. In a lot of those seller conversations now, and you know, conversion meetings or meetings with the sellers to talk to them about the auction process, it's having those real conversations around, like, this process, if nothing else, will tell you exactly what your property can sell for. And if that makes no sense, of course, you're not obligated to sell and you have our full support. But B, you know, if that doesn't make financial sense for you guys to accept the market and change your plans, there's a line in the sand for you. You know, waiting on the market and delaying your plans and having the stress and all that sort of stuff that's associated with that. Sellers are like super, super thankful that there's actually a process and a timeline and a point of decision with more information, you know.
Yeah.
But going into those conversations, not promising things, saying like, the only promise is we're going to find out, you know, X, Y, or Z, we start that bidding to start from price attractively enough, we're going to create opportunities for you to sell. It's just whether or not it makes sense. And it's like this refreshment that a lot of sellers say, like, this is all I want to know. You know, is now the right time or is it not? Like, do I wait? Do I plan for 3 years or do I just go, let's get out of here now? And if they're buying and selling in the same market, they can deal with the relative, you know, the relativity of maybe I'll get a good deal on the purchase, but it hurts on the sale, but I'll pick it up on the purchase.
Yeah.
You know, it's just about giving more information at the moment. And I think really diving into those conversations in the listing presentations now, or any seller talks, is if you're not doing that stuff, it's really hard to keep that trust. Well, that's why we're seeing, I think, a lot more expired listings, because a lot of those agents that haven't had to do that kind of work before aren't doing it. And these listings are slipping through the cracks for those that are hungry for them. And we'll pick them up and sell them. I mean, we would have sold 3 or 4 of those just in December.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess that the discovery process that you take the agent through, I think that there's a couple of discoveries in all of this as well, that if you were to use the process and use yourself, Shannon, is that I think that being on listing presentations before where you've got an agent and then you've got the client and you're presenting the auction process and asking a few questions, you being a third party and a new face to the equation, even if they don't want to use auction and even if they don't want to go down that path, I know that 99.9% of the time, the agent on the other side of the call will call after the presentation, go, I didn't realize that they were, you know, needing to move that quickly, or they'd like whatever. You've found some more information out of that situation.
Yeah.
Because you weren't so close to it. Then not only then speaking that if they choose to go down the path of auction and then we take it all the way through, even if it doesn't get a result that the seller says yes to because they're in complete control with, whether it's before or on the day of auction, then they choose to keep the property, that level of discovery in order to then price the property traditionally, or that level of discovery in a short period of time for the agent that the seller might not have been as committed to sell, those discovery opportunities that auction presents is just by putting a third party into play, which is someone like yourself or one of the other Harcourt's auctions team.
Yeah, totally. You know, and I'm, you know, I have the conversations all the time where, you know, I've got agents that know the process through and through and know that, hey, we're getting to that stage. I'll bring Shannon into the conversation as effectively like, you know, my in-house strategist or whatever you want to call it, like my team strategist. And we'll get back in there. And like you say, just having a different approach to the situation and going like, okay, what's the brass tacks here? Like, what are your plans? What's the why? What's your timing? You know, how do we get to this price? Why are you guys at this price, that, you know, expectation of price? How do we get to that figure? You know, let's unpack that. Because more often than not, it's you know, for lack of better terminology, it's invalidated. There's no real basis there for that number. It's just, oh, this allows me to do X, Y, or Z, or I just don't want to lose any money on this property. You know, they're kind of really intangible numbers a lot of the time. And if they're looking at sales data that's 30 days old as well too, it's still intangible.
Yeah.
So we just unpack that, like, why? And I know that every time we have those conversations, if they don't go auction, 9 times out of 10, they usually will, but the agent will get a really good price reduction, because it's like, not to come to Jesus talk, but it's like, all right, let's cut through the crap here. As much as your agent is probably, you know, great friends with you and, you know, has a great relationship with you, and no doubt they're doing their job, I think they can overcomplicate things. Instead of thinking, well, how am I going to find this person that's going to pay X, Y, or Z? It's, how do I get my sellers on board with meeting the market? Because that's our real job.
Yeah.
Finding out what the market's willing to pay for the property. We can't, you know, force anyone to overpay for a property or pay what our seller wants. We market it. We field the inquiry. We do the follow-up. We do all the work. We use as much leverage as we can to try and get that best possible result. If it doesn't match up, this is why we have days on market increase, because the sellers aren't there. The market's there, the sellers aren't. It's the agent's position to bring those two parties together here. And not having a volume of information, a volume of feedback when you've got a higher price, it's really hard to educate when you've got no one coming through the door. So it's the work that goes into preparing and not overselling or overpromising stuff, but allowing the market to truly speak, but capturing that information and delivering it.
There's the goal.
Doing the follow-up, getting the feedback, you know, get the price feedback. None of this stuff, you know, and I work with hundreds of agents, a lot of great ones. So many don't do that stuff because they've never had to, you know?
Yeah.
It's
a strong point, mate, is that, again, there's no point getting 1 million people through the door if no one buys it. And you haven't captured any of the data, not only to increase your own business, but also in order to inform the sellers so they can make an informed and educated decision. But, you know, you and I can go round and round in circles speaking about this stuff all day, mate, but it's certainly something that we're very passionate about. I guess that final question for you, mate, as we end out the podcast, is that someone said to me that, you know, cities will never die, being the good cities like San Francisco, you know, New York and all of these other places. Someone said that, you know, that's where most people that come out of university or come out of, you know, their school will go to one of the major cities to meet their significant other and, you know, build a life, and then they'll possibly move out. Do you still have faith that San Francisco is going to keep its stripes, mate, as being one of the best cities in the North America?
You know what? As much as it feels a lot more like a stepping stone kind of city, a lot of people come in, they'll work here for a few years, make some money, meet someone maybe, and move on. Very transitionary city. It is a very exciting place to be. I think it'll always have that charm and always have that magnetism to it. There's been a little shine that's probably come up in the financial district and the tech world and working environment here. But as far as outside of work stuff, still an amazing city. And those that live here, you know why.
There you go. Well, folks, if you're ever in San Francisco, more specifically the Marina District, Shannon will buy you a coffee, talk your ear off about auction, and don't get him started about cars or motorbikes or anything like that. But either way, mate, thanks for joining us on this episode of Rethink Real Estate.
Thanks for having me on. Great chat with you.
So about 75% of our audience hasn't liked, followed, or subscribed to our podcast. It would mean the world to us, and it would help this podcast more than you know to expand our reach if you were to like, follow, or subscribe on any of the platforms that you're watching or listening on. Thanks again.